Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
First, my good evening. Welcome to Thursday's update here on Manx Radio, where we'll take you through the main news of the day before 5:30. So coming up, the Manx Care CEO, Theresa Cope, offers reassurances about the future of Ramsay Cottage Hospital. Also tonight, Onchan Raceway says it has no plans to sell up. Australia has just banned social media for under-16s. Is it time for us to consider the same move here? How do you think your children would feel about that? Would you like to have your say on shaping the Isle of Man's path towards net zero? That's coming up in Timworld next week. And later, a Manx entrepreneur hopes her new business can build a supportive community for women on the island experiencing hair loss. We'll have that, the traffic, the travel, the weather as well. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email studio@manxradio.com. We'll start with a roundup of the news headlines with Darren this evening. Fastamai.
As Australia bans social media for under-16s, a Manx campaign group has been discussing whether or not smartphones is an ideal Christmas gift. Delay Smartphones IOM has applauded steps taken to ban the devices in schools this year and says the more parents agree to not buy them as presents, the better. The Infrastructure Minister says a new system for a public sector rent increases will stop local authorities assuming that government will top up any deficiencies.
Local authorities just assumed that, well, we're going to not change the rent levels to match costs because we know government will just top it up.
Michelle Hayward adds that from next year, annual rent adjustments will be directly linked to the previous year's September Consumer Price Index. And this weekend, we'll see the return of the Isle of Man Young Farmers' annual Christmas tractor run. Each year, the procession of tractors decked out in lights and tinial tours the island to raise money for charity. Last year saw over £18,000 raised. In international news, following an inquiry into the death of a woman poisoned by a Russian nerve agent found Vladimir Putin morally responsible, Sir Keir Starmer says Moscow isn't just a danger to Ukraine.
But it also reinforces why we need to remain vigilant to the ever-present threat from Putin and from Russia.
Dawn Sergius died in Wiltshire in 2018 after mistakenly thinking the chemical weapon Novichok was perfume. The UK Education Secretary has been asked to seriously consider compulsory CCTV in nurseries. A safeguarding review has been set up after a worker admitted 26 sex offences against children in his care in North London. And Lando Norris insists he's not trying to think about lifting the F1 title for the first time. The British driver will be crowned champion if he finishes the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix in third place or higher. Those are the headlines. News next at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Darren. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. So it'll be dry this evening, clear intervals, light winds as well. They'll back to the southwest. It is going to be a little bit cloudier overnight. There will be a few scattered showers. Minimum temperatures will be around 5 Celsius. Then tomorrow, a dry start, but rain will arrive around midday or shortly after that, turning heavy as the southeast wind strengthens. It is actually going to reach strong to gale force by late afternoon. We know there's some travel disruption already. It will ease later tomorrow evening. The rain will also ease as well, and it will become more showery during the evening, and top temperatures will be around 11 Celsius. And then just looking ahead to the weekend, rain at times on Saturday, moderate winds, then rain at first on Sunday, but then it will be dry and bright for Sunday afternoon. Sunset this evening was at 3:57. Sunrise tomorrow morning will be at 8:20.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674573 or visit the showroom on the Snugborough Trading Estate.
A ground source heat pump can save thousands of pounds a year, and you can harness this energy on island with Geothermal Limited, the water borehole experts. Visit drilling.im and see how a ground source heat pump borehole works. That's drilling.im.
Reach the Isle of Man's biggest radio audience with Manx Radio. Airtime, sponsorship and digital opportunities available. For more information on how we can help your business grow its market share, contact the friendly, experienced team on sales at manxradio.com.
Cannells Agricultural Supplies have been serving the good folk of the North for over 30 years. Supplying homegrown wheats, whole and rolled oats, working clothing, fencing, animal feeds, parts, tools and emergency supplies. Call Julia on 880206 or find Cannells on Facebook.
Direct cremation is just that, an affordable and simple cremation without all the costs associated with a funeral service. Find out more by visiting directcremation.im or phone Direct Cremations on 478422.
It's coming up to 5:05 here on Update. So we heard on the programme yesterday that Ramsay and District Cottage Hospital was going to be temporarily relocating some of its services while Manx Care deals with that ongoing pest control problem they have there. It's going to coincide with the reopening of the Martin Ward, which has been closed since October, while I dealt dealt with the same problem there. But lots of you have been asking if this is the beginning of the end of the facility, and Manx Care says categorically the answer to that is no. Chief Executive Teresa Cope has been talking to Amy and began by explaining how the work's been funded.
I think the work so far has put aside around £80,000 for it. Manx Care is effectively the tenant of the estate. The estate is owned by the government and the Department of Health and Social Care, and the budget is coming from the Department of Infrastructure, who have led on the work to secure the funding for this. So they're probably best placed to answer that question. But we have been supported for that work to happen on Martin Ward, and the agreement and processes in place to be able to repeat that work and make sure the rest of the hospital site is safe.
We are still getting calls from listeners who are really scared that this is going to be a way for the hospital to be closed permanently in the future. Can you say categorically now that Ramsay and District Cottage Hospital is not at risk of closure?
It absolutely is not at risk of closure, and I cannot stress that strongly enough. There is no plans to close the hospital. We have needed to temporarily relocate the delivery of some of the services that have been provided at the hospital site in order for this work to happen. It is not possible to do the work while still running services. As soon as that work is completed, those services will return to Ramsay District Cottage Hospital. We expect that to be all back in place by no later than the end of April. So it is important we reassure the public. Our website and the information we have shared talks about where those services will be temporarily located from. And we have MCALs available to support signposting patients. We've put on things like extra shuttle buses to help transport patients and minimise the disruption and impact on them. Where possible, our staff will move to the new locations, the temporary locations, in order to maintain patient continuity of care. So it has been incredibly well thought through, and we will continue to update the public as we work through these changes. They all come into effect from the 15th, so just over a week away. But as I say, it's not a decision we have taken lightly, but it is important to maintain the safe provision of our services. But categorically, all services will retain and remain at Ramsay District Cottage Hospital for the future.
That's Manx Care CEO Teresa Cope talking to Amy. And as we heard there, those services temporarily relocated from Monday. That's the 15th of December. You can find all the information you need at manxradio.com. It's coming up to 8 minutes past five, and Douglas Council is planning to sell 17 social housing properties, which require significant investment, to the private market. So the local authority says it's met with tenants on Falconcliff Terrace and Marathon Drive who will be affected, and says it's also operating with a tenants first policy. Leader of Douglas Council, Devon Watson, says the money from the sales will be ring-fenced for future social housing developments in the city.
So there are two big problems when it comes down to housing and two big demands from the public. One is, while Douglas does continue its sworn sort of vacant dilapidated properties within Douglas, the council and the state in general do own some properties that themselves are vacant. So this absolutely has to be addressed. And secondly, there's not enough social housing. And we've got about 250 people on the waiting list who are desperate to get these properties occupied. So the most cost-effective and efficient way that we can do this is partner with the private sector, sell some vacant properties that we currently do have, give some families in the private sector the ability to purchase these homes, renovate them, do them up, partner with the skills in the private sector to get that done, and then use those resources to build more social housing that is desperately needed, rather than holding onto an asset that we ourselves can't do up ourselves.
How have tenants reacted and what have they said? I imagine it was quite a difficult conversation to have.
At the end of the day, what social tenants want and what they expressed is, A, they don't want to live next to vacant properties. B, they want to know that they themselves are protected and secure, which is why we made sure we had a conversation with absolutely everyone. What approach is, it's tenants first, and we have to make sure that this scheme works for them. And if it doesn't work for them, it fundamentally doesn't work. So they're supportive of the idea that maybe they're going to have some young families living back there, because these aren't just a collection of homes. This is a community at the end of the day. And if you're able to get a community back into these homes, then that works. Everybody knows someone who has a housing issue. Everybody knows someone who struggles to get housing. So in the next few days, we're going to be putting out an expression of interest to build new social housing properties that we're going to go out to developers, and people are happy and confident if this money goes back into having tangible results to build another housing block.
That's Leader of Douglas City Council, Devon Watson, talking to the local democracy reporter, Emma Draper, there about that scheme being started to sell some of the social housing to the private market. This came up quite a bit on Man in Line at lunchtime. And so Devon Watson will actually be live on Breakfast tomorrow, just addressing some of the concerns that were raised. You'll be able to hear that at about 10 past eight tomorrow. It's 10 past five now. And in Australia from today, anyone under the age of 16 on social media will start to have their accounts removed. A full ban restricting children's social media will come into force today, or next week actually, on the 10th of December. Meanwhile, here on the Isle of Man, there's a group of adults who want other parents to delay giving their children smartphones. And in January this year, there was that new policy introduced by the Department of Education stating that while students could bring their smart devices to school, they must keep them turned off during lessons and while travelling through the school. Well, John Moss has been talking to two members of the Delay Smartphones Isle of Man group, Megan Kennish and John Bolton, about the possible effect of this move from Down Under.
What it will hopefully do is generate a conversation in households or amongst parents that seems to have been absent up to this point. And it's not just Australia. Malaysia have passed the same legislation that comes into force as of the 1st of January. There was a vote amongst the European Commission last week where 493 of the members voted in favour of a similar style ban EU-wide.
Megan, if I can turn to you, you say that when you started this exercise, you felt like you were alone. You found, I think, someone else to talk to.
Anything that talks about the topic of smartphones and children can only be a good thing. Like anything, the more conversation, the better. The more awareness, the better. The more parents feel seen, and especially at a political level, I never see that as a bad thing.
Talking about pressure, though, we're coming up to Christmas. Thousands of kids will be saying, I want a smartphone. How do parents combat that sort of pressure?
If you think your child is going to be the only one who's denied a smartphone as a Christmas present this year, but if you know that maybe even just one other parent is also going to say no, I think that already makes parents feel a bit more empowered and a bit bolder. And to be able to say to your child, you are not the only one, that is such a comfort.
John, can I just put a phrase that I've heard saying it's removing young children from their communities? What would you say to that?
I would imagine that most children's communities are the school. They're with the friends that they knock around with. They're part of the clubs that they're part of. To a generation that hasn't known anything different, it will seem, well, in Australia, it will seem like a real big shift. And not every family or every child is going to be part of that. We've seen about the rise in the number of VPNs that have been signed up to so that kids can hide their location so that they can then effectively continue their social media existence. But it's going to help parents sort of push back against what you mentioned just now to Megan. It's a much easier conversation for a parent to have with a child that wants one of these things when you say, look, if we allow you to use these platforms, you know, we'll be breaking the law. You'll be breaking the law by doing it.
That's John Bolton and also Megan Kennish talking to John Moss there. They're both from the Delay Smartphones Isle of Man group. It's 13 minutes past five and there are no wishes to sell or cease operating Onchan Raceway. It's the message from the company, which has released a statement in response to a recent media report around the current status of the facility. Rob has the details.
In a lengthy statement, the organisation adds it remains committed to continuing the long-standing tradition of motorsport in the area. However, it's raised concerns over what it claims are a number of constraints introduced by Onchan District Commissioners within a proposed new lease agreement for the site. In its view, Onchan Raceway Limited believes the proposed new lease terms are making day-to-day running of the facility increasingly difficult. Among the organisation's concerns are a recent request to move stock cars from an area in which they're stored and prohibiting the use of an outside area as a pit extension. The company adds its priority has always been safety, especially for children, families and competitors, and claims several of the new restrictions would negatively impact this. Furthermore, Onchan Raceway Limited says in light of the perceived challenges, it has suggested that the local authority might consider purchasing the raceway's assets if a situation arose where the current organisers were forced to leave. Officials add, without the existing infrastructure, it would be extremely difficult for the commissioners or any future tenants to run racing or any other motorsport activities at the site. Manx Radio has approached Onchan District Commissioners for comment.
Rob Pritchard there.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside Tyres and Service Centre.
So we had a message a little bit earlier to say a coach had broken down near the Southern Civic Amenity site, and so it's a little bit busy in that area. Hopefully that's resolved now, but just something to be aware of if you are travelling home that way. Onken, temporary lights in King Edward Road, still between Growdle and the Old Liverpool Arms. In Kirkmichael, there are temporary lights on the main road. Also on Sulbury Bridge, temporary lights on the Zare Road in Ramsey, and also temporary lights on the Ramsey Road near Ardriat. Just to let you know that actually on Saturday and Sunday, the main Peel to Douglas Road is going to be closed at Union Mills. That'll be from 9am to 5pm both days. That's because of some dangerous trees that need felling. Buses will be diverted. We'll give you more details of that over the weekend, and it'll be on our website as well. All okay down at the airport. A couple of little delays on the Liverpool and London Gatwick flight, but nothing too major. All okay down at the Steam Packet this evening. It will be 5:30-ish that the Maximum gets in, heading out again for Heysham at 7:15. Tomorrow's afternoon sailing from Heysham has been cancelled though. That's because of the adverse weather which is expected. So more details on that tomorrow.
Quayside Tyres and Service Centre with 1 year's free engine warranty from Castrol. Get more with Quayside. You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
So, the future of the Isle of Man's net zero policy could be heading to the ballot box, but critics are not happy about it, I think it's fair to say. Christian is with me now. Fastamai, Christian, just remind us what the story is here, first of all.
Yeah, first to my Beth. So it's back on the agenda, like you say. It's increasingly framed around public choice. Now, we already know that Middle MHK Stu Peters wants a referendum on scrapping net zero, timed for next year's general election. Now, his position isn't new. He's previously said that residents should have a direct say. But now the Green Party has hit out at those proposals, which are set to be presented to Tymwald next week.
OK, would you just bring us up to speed and remind us just where this stems from?
Yeah, so the government in 2021 passed the Climate Change Act, and that set out various interim targets and the ultimate target of reaching net zero by 2050. We already know that the government has admitted it's unlikely it'll meet the first interim target, but that's in a nutshell.
So you mentioned, Christian, the Green Party is unhappy with these proposals. What can you tell us about what they're actually saying?
Yeah, so they're pushing back. They say removing the policy would leave the island without direction at the worst possible moment, calling net zero a local shield, not a global gesture or virtue signalling. Now, they argue that it gives clarity to bodies like the government departments, like councils, industry, then that scrapping it could mean higher long-term costs and lower resilience. Now, Mr. Peters says he campaigned solo on opposing such strategies back in 2021, and that a vote against his motion would, in his words, be a vote against democracy. But the Green Party warns that the island risks losing a clear roadmap when climate planning has only become more costly if delayed.
OK, Christian, so then what are the next steps here?
So we'll hear the debate at next week's sitting of Tymwald. I think the likely arguments that we're going to hear are the current referendum legislation is out of date. In its current form, it can't facilitate a referendum. Chris Thomas, the Douglas Central MHK, has been given leave to update those laws. But when I last spoke with him, he told me he's still working through it. He hopes to bring the updated laws by spring next year, if I'm not mistaken. So potentially there could be a way for the island to hold a referendum if all of that went through without any issues. But if there's one thing we know about politics, it's things are never simple and straightforward. So it's very much a case of watch this space.
Christian, thank you very much indeed. 18 minutes past five now, and Garth commissioners voted to support Manx Utilities Sewage Treatment Works planning application. Sorry if you're having your tea. At its public meeting last night, the board discussed the proposal and the toll it had taken on them while forming a decision. They also discussed sheltered housing rents and parking restrictions in Laxey. Local Democracy reporter Emma Draper was there.
The commissioners voted 4-3 in favour of the application with one abstention. This was with a provision that some conditions are suggested to the planning committee. These were drawn up by Commissioner Richard Henthorne and included monitoring the water quality and publishing results online, request the ultraviolet treatment is used all year round, and financial charges should be imposed if raw sewage is let into the bay outside of a storm surge. Chair Stan Rysak was in favour and said wherever the site is located, it will upset someone, and added the board has a massive responsibility to do the right thing for the ratepayers. Vice Chair Marinda Farragher said she couldn't support the application because of the destruction it would cause to Axon Fell Plantation, and felt the MUA and consultancy firm Arcadis hadn't done enough work on the other sites. Board members Tim Kenyon and Stuart Clegg threatened to resign from the board if the local authority voted to support the MUA's proposals.
Mr. Clegg said the utility authority should have considered Miriveg as a more viable option and wouldn't take his grandchildren to Laxey Beach if the proposals were implemented. As part of her reasoning, Commissioner Aisling Creer said over two drop-in sessions organised, only 130 residents attended, 73 completed a survey, and of those 73 people, 26 were fully against the plans. The local authority will now lodge a formal response to the planning application. Also on the agenda was a discussion about setting the rent for the Coolroy Sheltered Housing Complex next year. Julie Mattin, who runs the site, told the board it will either go up by 2.9% or 3.9% under the new rules announced by the Department of Infrastructure earlier this week. She added the additional 1% would increase the maintenance budget by roughly £500 and that the residents were expecting it to be increased by 5%. The board agreed to increase the rent by 3.9% for the next financial year. There was also a discussion about the lack of parking restrictions on Captain's Hill in Laxey. Commissioner Aisling Creer said she would like to see a maximum introduced of 16 hours within 24 to try and alleviate the amount of campervans on the road. She added it has become more dangerous after parking spaces were moved to the opposite side and pedestrians have to walk down the middle of the road. It was agreed by the commissioners to speak to the Department of Infrastructure about introducing a restriction. Gough commissioners will next meet on the 7th of January 2026.
Local democracy reporter Emma Draper with the details from Gough commissioners' public meeting last night. It is 21 minutes past five. And a Manx woman with alopecia says she felt really, really alone when she lost her hair. Megan runs Embrace Wigs. It's a wig shop which also provides consultations to those trying to find the best fit for them. She has alopecia herself. She lost her hair 3 years ago. And she's been telling Amy her story and how she hopes her business will be able to help establish a support network here on the island.
It started 3 years ago. I was working as a dog groomer and I caught a virus. And it started off with a burning pain down the back of my head and on my scalp. And my hair started falling out in handfuls. I'd get in the shower and it would just start falling out. And it was really, really scary. And then a company asked me to do a video about my hair loss and do a wig review for them. And I'd never done a video before. I hated having pictures taken. And I said no. And they said, oh, well, you know, it would really help women. And also you'll get some of the wigs for free. And because they're so expensive, I thought, right, OK, I've got to learn to do videos and take photos and just build up that confidence. So that's when I started that. So I reviewed wigs for 2 years, learning everything that I could about them. And then I thought, why am I advertising wigs for other companies? You know, I need to do this and make things better for women on the Isle of Man. And that's when I decided to start Embrace Wigs.
What impact does wearing a wig have on you and how you feel about yourself?
When I meet people for the first time, if I don't have hair on, I don't feel like me. And when you first lose your hair, it just takes away your confidence. You don't feel like you anymore. It takes away your confidence, your identity and your sense of self. And I think because hair is so linked to health and vitality and that assumption of if you've lost your hair, you have cancer or you're very physically unwell. And people with, say, alopecia areata can be fine health-wise. And then lots of people asking questions about, say, cancer or, you know, what's your diagnosis? And that can be quite upsetting. People feel like they can ask you about it. And it's such a strange thing because people don't ask about, say, other health conditions. But when it comes to hair, I think because it's so visible, people feel like they can ask.
With Embrace Wigs, talk to me a little bit more about the business itself.
When I first lost my hair, there was very little support for people with hair loss. I didn't know anybody else with alopecia. I didn't have anybody else to talk to. So I provide wigs, obviously, but a lot of emotional support. My background is mental health nursing. So I do consultations at home and just offer people that support. And a lot of women, I'm the first person that they've ever spoken to who's also got alopecia. And lots of tears, lots of sad tears, lots of happy tears. Yeah, the consultation is generally quite emotional for people. We're looking at setting up like a hair loss event as well. So people who feel able can come and meet other people with hair loss. So that's something that I really, really want to do. And yeah, the wig part of it is only a part of it. I'm on the Manx Care list for wig suppliers and topper suppliers, and oncology patients get £150 towards a wig, and alopecia patients get £300 a year, which can be split into two lots of £150. And to be referred for the alopecia side of things, you just need to go to your GP and they can write a simple letter saying that you have medical hair loss, and then the referral will go through, just a little letter.
That is Megan Coulthurst from Embrace Wigs talking there to Amy Griffiths. And you can see a little video on the Facebook page, and we've also got more details on the Manx Radio website as well. Coming up to 25 past five, it's sport time now with Rob Fastermy.
Fastermy, starting with motorsport, and entries have now opened for the 2026 Isle of Man TT races. Organisers are now welcoming applications from competitors looking to take on the Snaefell Mountain course from Monday the 25th of May to Saturday the 6th of June next year. The 2026 meeting will once again feature a 10-race schedule, albeit with some changes for the respective classes. Among those changes, the Super Twin class will now be known as the Sport Bike TT as part of alterations for that category, which will see the new generation of sport bike machinery race alongside Super Twin machines. And more generally, there'll be an increase in planned rest days from 2 to 3, with the addition of a rest day during practice and qualifying week on Thursday the 29th of May. Or you can view the 2026 Isle of Man TT races schedule in full at manxradio.com. Elsewhere, Manx hockey star Sienna Dunn and the England under-21s women's team have taken their first victory of this year's Junior Women's World Cup today. The national side earned a 4-1 win over South Africa in what was their second match of Pool D at the tournament in Santiago, Chile. Bibber Mills starred in front of goal for England, netting twice, whilst Lottie Bingham and Freya Robinson were also on target. South Africa did grab a consolation goal in the fourth and final quarter through Unsatopa Mokoena. As a result, England's victory could see them top their group by the end of play today, depending on the scoreline between China and Austria this afternoon. Dunn and England are due to return to action on Saturday for their final Pool D contest against Austria, which is scheduled to get underway on the day at 11:15 a.m. local time. And finally, in athletics, this weekend sees the end of an era for an Ireland event that has been running for the last three decades. The 92nd and last edition of the Winter Hill League will be held at Culdon on Saturday before the series, as it's currently known, comes to an end. Only once since its inception in 1995 has a race been cancelled, and that was last year, also at Culdon, and that was due to extensive storm damage at the Ardwallan plantation. The league isn't completely disappearing, though, as it will return as a new-look series of summer fell races in 2026.
You know what I'm going to ask you, don't you, Rob, about whether or not you've ever done any hill running?
Do you know what? I do know people who have been involved in fell running, and I've seen plenty of footage of it. It looks very, very demanding. But to be honest, I can imagine for those who take part as well, it can be incredibly satisfying as a challenge.
So that's a no then, wasn't it?
That's a no. I was trying to be subtle about it, but no.
We got you. Rob, thank you very much indeed. That is all from Update This Evening. Thank you for your Thank you for your company. Oh, I should just leave it there. Coming up next, it is Jacques Lair with Bob Carswell. Greatest Hits then tonight with Michelle Caine sitting in for Chris Kinney is at 6. At 9, it's A Little Like Music with Morris. And then Ree has After Hours at 10. Whatever you're doing this evening, have a good one. I'm just going to leave it there.